Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode, 10? Double digits. Holy crap. We're officially, what are we now? Tweeners? Preteens? I don't even know.
Next we'll be in-betweeners.
Yeah, right. Episode 10 of Cocktails and Screams. Tonight we are talking about the 2019 film, The Headhunter. Yeah. Didn't get a lot of play in the theaters.
What are you talking about, 2009?
2019.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought you said nine. I was like,
I watched
the wrong movie.
I paused for dramatic effect on the 19
yeah.
part of it. As you can see, we have some disco lights going to celebrate our 10th episode.
I had mine, but mine weren't as fantastic.
Oh, what? Yours are great. I just stopped mine from moving, so I don't want to cause anybody to go into a leprosy.
Mine moved a little too much. I was going to go into a shock.
So this movie supposedly made for a grand total of $30,000. I think they went a little over, but we're going to talk about it. It is a small independent feature, and I had a blast with this movie when it came out last year, and I thought it'd be really cool to explore it with Chris on an episode.
Yeah, I hadn't seen it. I saw the trailer, but I hadn't seen it. And now doing the deep dive, I actually recognize the people that made it, and it's pretty interesting that they did this for.
Yeah. So we're going to get into that. But first, of course, it's Cocktails and Screams. We would be
starting to load up the bar back here.
Time to load up the bar back there. Very nice. Yeah. I have to get something similar going on here until we get the studio up and going. But Chris is going to take us through our cocktail tonight.
And because it's Vikings.
Yes.
Right? Well, it got out the Stein.
The Stein.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Okay, so this is called the Screaming Viking, and the history of this is that it didn't exist, right? It didn't exist until the first episode of the sixth season of the movie Cheers.
The movie Cheers? Or
the TV show Cheers,
TV
sorry.
Show. Okay, I got you.
And so Sam had lost the bar, and the new bartender was like gloating and saying, I know every cocktail ever made and I can make it and blah, blah, blah. Well, just then Norm walks in, and Norm never drinks cocktails, but they basically boast that Norm knows every cocktail known to man and he'll stump you. He's like, so Norm walks in knowing he's going to get a beer anyways at some point. And he tells him, make me a screaming Viking. And the guy's like, I don't know how to do that. And right then, like, Woody chimes in knowing that it's a joke and knows that I'll just make whatever
right.
and give it to him. And he'd be like, that's amazing. You nailed it. You know?
Perfect.
So this is – it was a clear drink in the show with a old bruised zucchini, because obviously Cheers doesn't garnish beers. Right? So the only garnish they have – or it's not zucchini, but cucumber – so the only thing they had laying around was an old bruised cucumber to put as a garnish in his thing. So that's what it is. And it has evolved in the pathos and the lore of cocktails. It's kind of like a gimmick cocktail. So this one calls for vodka. So I got Dan Aykroyd's vodka.
Oh, Crystal Skull. Very nice.
You're right. Yeah, that's going to go back in the back when we're done.
Oh, great.
So you go one shot, but because I have this Stein, I'm gonna double up everything.
Yeah, I think
so,
you should.
If you're going big, also if you're going true Viking, you go two shots of vodka, right? So since that already has ice in it, when I'm doing the setup, I'm not gonna add ice to the setup because I don't want to. It's gonna be even more watered down ultimately. So I'm gonna go two shots of the Skull.
I don't think I've ever tried Skull vodka before. So
it's actually a corn vodka.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, but it's been winning a lot of. So there's one. It's been winning a lot of awards.
Huh.
Like I said, Dan Aykroyd and other partners own the company. It's Canadian.
Okay.
Whew, that smells amazing. I've never had it. Well, yeah, I have. We had it before. I got it.
There's
the smaller bottle back there.
Yeah.
There's a smaller empty bottle back there. But it's pretty smooth. Then it calls for one shot of extra dry vermouth.
Yep.
Which I use this Martini Rossi. I'm gonna go two with this though. I don't really like vermouth, but
yeah, I'm not a huge fan of it either.
To each their own.
Yeah.
To me, two shots of vermouth seems a little much. So I'm going to do a one and a quarter shot.
Okay.
Then, it's kind of like a vodka gimlet with vermouth, honestly.
Yeah.
Pretty much all it is. And then a shot of lime juice, which I'm going to do two shots. And if it doesn't, if I don't like the taste, I'm going to do three.
I actually used fresh limes for this just because I'm a freaking snob, so.
Well, this is made from concentrate of fresh, of actual limes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. There we go. Yeah, it's really starting to look like a gimlet, honestly. Then, you know, they say to stir it. I'm going to shake it up.
Okay.
You know. But first, I'm going to do some garnish. So I got a little of the...
What do you got there?
Cucumber.
Cucumber?
Oh, nice. Bruised cucumber. Okay. Or not, yes. Yeah, so, and then I actually speared some.
Nice.
So it calls for celery and cucumber spear. Huh. It's like kind of like a pickle. I think in Cheers they probably just put a pickle in there.
Yeah, probably.
They're gonna slide that in there. Get in there. There we go.
All right.
Then we're gonna. I'm just gonna.
Did you shake it?
I'm gonna shake that. I forgot if I did it or not. I think I
no,
did.
You didn't.
Whatever. What the heck?
Oh, you're losing something.
I just spilled everywhere.
Uh-oh.
You dummy. All right. Oh, it looks closed. See if I measured to the... Oh!
Oh, not
measured.
Bad.
Measured. I did
not
it again.
Bad. All right.
Sometimes I amaze myself.
All
right. Went right up to the ice.
Beautiful.
All right. That is supposedly the Screaming Viking.
Right. Which is completely appropriate for the movie, by the way. So.
Oh, yeah. And because that's pretty much all it is. Not very little dialogue.
Yeah, there's not a lot of dialogue here.
And the very little dialogue, mostly some grunting.
Yeah.
Some wheezing.
Yeah.
A couple screams.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Cheers.
Screaming all right. Viking.
Nice. You're gonna get rid of the garnish
there.
I'm
really going to...
You don't impale yourself.
You don't hear that? I'm just going to beat it into submission. It's like scream for me.
Yeah, that's not bad. What do you think?
Vodka gimlet.
Yeah.
With a little too much vermouth. But yeah.
You eased back on it, too.
It's definitely don't want more... lime juice. I probably do half the amount of lime juice.
Yeah.
So instead of two shots or three shots, just do the one. If you're making it in a regular Collins glass, it's actually one shot vodka, okay. One shot vermouth, and one equal parts of each and
okay.
One of the lime juice.
Yeah.
Then stirred, then poured into a cold Collins glass. With a sprig of celery and a spear of cucumbers. I added the little bits of cucumbers because I think it's going to need it.
Nice.
Anyways, so
that
without
is
further
great.
Ado,
yes.
Now that we have our tasty beverage.
So the Headhunter basically tells the story of one man who is played by actor Christopher Rieg?
Rieg.
I don't know. What do you think? Rieg or Rye?
I'd say it's a Rieg.
Rieg. Okay.
Rieg.
All right. Very nice. Who plays sort of a monster bounty hunter for a kingdom, and when the movie opens, he's with his daughter, and then we learn that some type of monster has taken her and killed her, and he is awaiting the return of this monster. He's called upon every once in a while by a horn. Yeah, it's very 13.
What are they though, the
bullhorns or
Whatever the big, it is an actual horn.
It's very 13th Warrior when he gets called. So, yeah. And he goes off and he dispatches these monsters and he comes back. Usually, I feel bad for this guy because he literally gets beat to shit every time he goes out and takes down one
gnarled.
Of these monsters.
Yeah.
You know, he comes back with these grievous bodily wounds. Yeah. And the thing that he has is he's got these jars of swamp mud that have been magically...
I'll call it mud salve.
Have been magically...
He puts on it all his sores and it heals everything.
It heals everything. Exactly.
Magical witch salve.
Right. So he's got... You know, when he comes in, he decapitates all these monsters and sticks them onto these stakes in his home. And eventually the monster that killed his daughter comes back and a whole
redemption
sort of series of things unfolds from there. So opening thoughts, Chris, what do you think?
I did not like that his horse died right before he got the chance to get redemption for the daughter, right?
Yeah.
So he kills some sort of werewolf. And during that phase of killing the werewolf, which is when he gets his face pretty messed up because he takes them. It's weird. It's like, I guess they don't show. See, that's the beauty of, I think one of the qualities of knowing you got a low budget and finding creative ways to show production value and move your story along is you really only have in-camera effects.
Yep.
Or sound effects, and they do that with all of this. So a lot of the fighting, a lot of the other aspects that would make that, if you had a bigger budget, would go to those big set pieces. They do with sound design.
Yeah,
which
all the battles
pretty amazing
screen.
in this movie.
Yeah,
it's pretty amazing. I did not like that the horse perished. But it kind of reminded me of Never Ending Story.
I gotta be honest with you, I didn't even notice that the horse had died.
Remember he carves out that little horse figurine and gives it to and puts it in the daughter's tomb.
And then
he hangs it, before he does that, he hangs up the bit.
Oh shit, next, that's right.
So there's the shot opens and there's a horseshoe in the tree.
Yeah.
Nailed it to the tree.
Yeah.
And then he comes up and hangs the bit, pats it, and then he goes and starts carving something and ends up being a little totem, horse totem.
I totally missed
that.
Puts in the grave
of the daughter, you know.
I totally missed that.
Yeah, that I didn't like that. I had a little, like, I still have PTSD with Artex's death and Never Ending Story. So whenever a horse dies or whatever, I always get a little cleft. So, but I really, the whole aspect of finding ways to, it's almost like you see that, you notice that there's characters in the movie, but there aren't, right?
Right.
Like the guy shooting the arrows that, like, they make the sound like he never goes to the castle, but he walks around the base of it, so you hear like a party going along. And hold on, what's that?
Sorry, I just, you know, I had a...
Oh, man, I wish
that,
we...
That was Lamal with Never Ending Story. We'll be right back with his other greatest hits.
Poor Lamal. What happened to Kaja Gugu? He was, such a good band. No, you're absolutely right, though. I mean, I think the presence of these characters on the fringe give it the look of having more of a cast than it actually does. And I think that's part of the genius of how they made this movie is that you see somebody who shot the arrow,
right?
And they're like, oh, who's that? Are we going to see something?
Well, he also does have this kind of, he has a character. I mean, he's the summoner. He's the one giving giving the king or the king his due. Because when he gets those letters, they say, what is it, duty of the king or something?
What's Order of the king, yeah.
Orders of the king.
Yeah.
So he's the king's guard sending out orders. So.
Right. Which I thought was another really cool, in terms of, I mean, you bring it up, it's like, you know, we have to decide where we're going to, we don't have much money, we have to decide where we're going to spend it. And instead of elaborating and wasting money on elaborate effects, they choose things that are very accessible to them. And he opens up a book at one point that's filled with all these, you know, magical sheets, and he's got all of the king's orders in this book, and you can kind of see the, and it's incredible artwork. I really dug the artwork. All these other beasts that this guy has killed. And it was just a nice set piece that really, I thought, bumped up, you know, some nice production value in it, you know, that they didn't have to do that. But again, it was money well spent that they could have easily flushed on CGI crap, yeah. You know, and they instead opted for that. I think
there was only one CGI thing. I thought it did pretty, I thought it was a pretty decent.
Which one was that?
When they showed the huge, like, troll walking.
At the end?
No, he's like, he's on his journey.
Yeah.
To go find the redemption monster, yeah. Or the right. Head. And he is camping out, and there's a, he's talking to, see, that's another thing where there's creating characters.
Yeah.
But they're creating characters kind of the way Conan created characters, where he, like in this, that scene, he's talking to a skeleton of an old warrior who died on the path.
What
killed you? A troll?
Yeah, that was
and
great.
Then later on in the scene, he kind of looks up and there's this huge, like 300 foot troll walking away from him in the moonlight. And he goes, Maybe it was a troll.
Yeah. Cause it's supposed to be far north.
So it looked decent. I mean, it really looked good, but it's one of those things. It's like, how much did they spend on that?
Yeah.
That they could have spent somewhere else, or did they create it on their own? Who knows?
Maybe.
You know, but I mean, there's a lot of things you start going down the list of when you're watching it, you really do. There are places where you're like, okay, there's telltale signs of not having a lot of money and finding ways to shoot to where they utilize their money. So they utilize the money to make sure that when they captured an image, it was in good standing.
Right.
And so they, at the end of the credits, you see that they shot on the red. They also did color really well. The color correction on this in post-production was done really well. They did do some pyro work in it, so with like to make sure that the fires were burning at a certain like color temperature and certain light, putting off a certain amount of light. The torches had all been staged so that they could use it as a primary light source. There's a lot of care that went into that. The care that went into putting together that's the beauty of when you don't have a lot of characters. And you just and you're like, okay, well, what's this person gonna wear? Well, they're gonna wear the same thing all the time because that's what they are.
Right.
And you're doing these fantasy things; they're all gonna wear the same thing. So you can say, well, we don't have to worry about a lot of wardrobe. We have to capitalize on the one thing that he wears all the time. So we're gonna build that out, and we're gonna spend time and effort. And a lot of it, I think, it looks like materials and no cost to labor, almost like. Friend of a friend or somebody wanted to be involved and wanted to continue to take the ride with these two guys who have been collaborating for years on shorts and other type stuff to, you know, be a part of it. And it looks like that's what they did.
It looks great. I mean,
there's no moment, the other telltale sign is it's only 70 minutes long. It's an hour and 10 minutes long. It's a short movie. But in weird way, it seems like it's a little too long to me. Like there's moments where I'm like, a lot of it is just him walking in and out of his camp or in and out of his house area.
Yeah.
Like it was a lot of that.
But then
there would be moments where you're like, wow, like the moment where he gets mad or when he finds out that the spoiler alert, that the head is going for the body of his daughter or his daughter's skeleton.
Yeah.
and he runs through the thing. Like, that image to me was always going to stand, like, I'm always burnt in my head of this Viking berserking through, which is doing what Vikings do, through the field with rage, and the only light is the torch that he's running through the thing with. And to me, shooting, like, the way, making decisions with their shooting, when knowing they had limited locations, I was like, I wish that I would have been able to see more of that.
Yeah.
Like, and which at the same time, when you have low budget, you don't have a lot of time either, so you have limited days. But with what they did have, well, I can't say anything negative. It's like, how can you say something negative? It's hard for me to believe they only had 30 grand.
You talked about the length of it, and when I sat down to watch it again today, it was interesting because I looked at how long it was, and it was an hour and 11 minutes, and I thought, oh, okay, well, you know, this will be pretty quick. And then watching it, it feels longer than it is, could there have been a couple of things probably snipped down? Yeah, but then you end up with a movie that's under an hour long, and it's, you know, harder to sell. But I think that was, you know, again, going back to the, you know, how do we spend our money? You know, how do we make this a full, you know, sort of immersive experience? And I think they did a great job. Yeah. They really, really do. Yeah.
I think they cast well. For him not having Christopher not having done hardly any work.
Yeah, this was his film debut. I mean, you know,
like he had been in a couple shorts.
Yeah.
He played, there was a British film about a half a year before this one.
Okay.
Called Hello, I Revere. Au revoir.
Right? We'll get a couple of links.
Hello, au revoir. My brain took me a minute to be like, what the fuck? But he plays Zeus in that.
Okay.
So he's obviously being typecast.
Yeah,
he played the Dane Guard in two episodes of The Last Kingdom, which was one of my favorite series. It's no longer, unfortunately. Yeah. But yeah, they basically, like you said before earlier today, you said that they cast him from a headshot.
Yeah.
And a small reel of stuff. And I guess when you're trying, you go, we will need somebody who looks like a Viking and they can hold, you know, 100 minutes on screen.
Yeah.
You know, I think that they accomplished.
Oh, absolutely.
That with in spades.
In spades. Absolutely. Yeah. I think he does a phenomenal job. I mean, clearly, when they offered him this job, I can just only imagine that they probably sat down with him and said, look, you carry in this movie. It, you know, there's not really going to be another cast here. This is on your shoulders. And he just seems like the type, according to what I read about the shoot, he just never complained. What we were talking about in After Hours last week, you know, just a professional through and through, showed up, did his job, tried to make everybody else's job easier, and he comes through in spades. I would love to see more work from him. I can't believe he hasn't been hired.
He has been hired.
He has, okay.
It's Peter Jackal did a movie called Medieval.
Okay.
So it stars Ben Foster, Sophie Love, and Michael Caine.
Oh, all right.
So
he's in that.
I'm looking for, he plays a character named Mick.
Mick.
And his buddy, also from The Last Kingdom, what's the movie? My brain just went blank. Not movie. He plays the Mountain in Game of Thrones.
Bjorn.
No, what? Sorry, not Bjorn. He's not the Mountain. Magnus Samuel. He's the guy's. What do you call him? World's Strongest Man.
Yeah.
Dude for years.
Yeah.
I can't say his last name. Samuelson? Magnus Samuelson?
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
I'm thinking different. Okay.
But I think he was old school
Okay.
Strongman.
Oh,
so obviously the guy's getting typecast as, but it goes with his facial. Like he's, it's like he's ripped, but he's not like modern day ripped. He's like, he's like, I've been chopping wood and slaying dragons.
Yeah, he's like Rocky fit in when he
what's
goes
his
to
name?
Russia.
He's the Witcher thick. He's like,
Henry Cavill. Yeah,
Henry Cavill. Like he's like beefy, strong. Yeah. Like no fat in his body, but every muscle has this weird kind of like, I don't know, iron to it.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no rippling.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he's getting that typecast, obviously, but it's selling right now. So he kind of is in the right position at the right time, you know?
Yeah, totally.
And then he's also in a movie in pre-production called The King Without a Name.
Okay.
So
what's his role in that?
And it looks like an unnamed warrior and his army arrive in Norway and begin to kill entire Viking settlements. It's a prophecy that brings about the final days of Ragnarok upon the arrival of the dark man known as the King Without a Name. And he's looks like playing the lead.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Looks like he's playing the lead.
Right. So another romantic comedy from him. Okay,
yeah.
That's good.
And it looks like it is a Danish film. He's
nice. So. Nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's good to see. I mean,
I'm really happy to see the dudes like, but it's weird that he's working, right?
Right.
But and they obviously gave him his huge bump and his huge start to show that, but in the last 3 years, and they don't have anything developing, like, so Jordan, Donnie.
Yeah.
Jordan Downey, he has nothing coming up. He just, all he did was edit a movie called The Big Ugly this year.
Really?
Huh. And Kevin Stewart, the other main collaborator on this.
Yeah.
Just does a bunch of, which you obviously see that he's pretty good with a camera.
Yeah, for sure. Right? Yeah.
So he gets a lot of work with as a DP, a cinematographer. So, but they don't have any new collaborations that I see coming up that they've done together.
Maybe they
have a deal and they're just shopping around for story now.
Maybe.
We are aware that they are trying to reboot the Conan series, and I think these guys would be perfect to seeing what they were able to do with what they say is $30,000.
Yeah.
Imagine if somebody gave them 30 million, and said we're gonna give you 30 million if you can pull it off and give us a world, we'll give you a trilogy.
Right.
If you can't, we'll shop elsewhere afterwards. But we'll give you 30 million if you can build the world of Conan the Barbarian, or just the Barbarian.
Right.
And make it a world that like redoes that whole. Basically restarts that whole mystical
franchise story. Yeah, Robert Howard franchise. Yeah, I mean, when I watched this movie last year, because I'd heard about it and I saw the trailer and it looked amazing, I reached out to these guys on social media and they were really cool. They definitely appreciated the review that I left on Google and tagging them on social media and saying how much I enjoyed the movie. And I asked them about a sequel. Didn't really get, you know, an answer per se, but, you know, obviously we're going to tag them on this episode and send them this episode of Cocktails and Screams and let them know that their work is tremendously appreciated, because I think they did a phenomenal job on this movie. I really enjoyed
definitely.
It. You know, and I even just to go back to the scene where, you know, Christopher Rake's character is camping out and he's having a conversation with the skeleton. It's a great scene. It's quick, you know, and it's only a few lines long, but I really thought that they did a great job. He's sitting there eating, the fire's flick. I love the lighting in this movie. It's just is phenomenal. So to hear you say that they did pyro to get
exposure with flame and getting that, you know, it's
quality. It's that's tough.
Yeah, it's a feat.
So yeah, I mean, I hope we hear that these guys are doing another movie.
But check this. They say they only spent.
Chris has access to IMDb.
Yeah.
Pro,
so check this. They only have. Well, I mean, you can get this anywhere, but they only had $30,000 to make it, but they're saying the worldwide gross is only $44,000.
Oh yeah, I don't know if I believe
and
that.
All the numbers, like, I know that there is a common consistency in Hollywood and in filmmaking globally to underassume and overdeliver, or right. You know, under pitch but over deliver, or basically like, okay, if we have $1 million and we say we had $1 million for this movie, is it going to make us look good or bad?
Yeah.
And then if they find out testing wise, well, it's going to make us look bad. It's like, okay, well, we only had 150,000 then.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm not saying that they didn't have $30,000, but it's that baffling to look at the end product and seeing where it seems there could be that much because of the limited locations, the limited actors, and maybe they just had more free time on their hands.
Yeah, maybe.
Like they did shoot in Portugal.
Yep.
So they obviously got some, 'cause Portugal, I think, still has a actual federal film fund, an actual film countrywide film fund.
Yep.
I think they might have been able to take advantage of that.
Well, the location in Portugal was
maybe
a
the 30,000 was money that they actually got that they have to pay back.
Yeah, maybe.
Where everything else was kind of either on the arm or done through creative of human capital.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I think that's what the place in Portugal was. It was somebody, one of the family members had a house, and so that's the main set piece for the movie.
Yeah, so they just went in there, dressed the house in the surrounding area, got a couple generators, and then went out there and just nailed it.
Just nailed it down. Yeah.
See, that
alone would save them a ton of money.
Yeah, that's if you don't have to pay locations and your carte blanche when you get there.
Yeah.
Like, when you get there and they're like, take as long as you want, guys, in that backfield. Just take as long as you want, whatever you need. And we even cook you dinners and whatever.
Yeah.
Like, whatever you need.
Yeah.
And then they're like, well, shit, why don't we take advantage of that? Let's write a story around it. Okay, exactly. We'll figure that out.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what would you want to spend the money on? Well, we got to have some believable – if we're going to have a Viking, we're going to have our Viking bounty hunter.
Yeah.
In the era of the Dark Ages, it's going to need to be believable. So we need to focus on wardrobe.
Yeah.
And we need to focus on set pieces like casting or making sure that we get access to a really nice sword and making sure that when he is getting these heads, that we can actually provide good looking heads. So
right.
We need a mat. We get collaborating with a mask builder company, which they did. Like, when you start looking at the credits and you see in the credits what is showcased, you really start trying to calculate, okay, did they get that on the arm as a credit? Did the people see some of their other work? Like the fact that both of these guys created Critters the Bounty Hunter, a little short fan film Critters reboot, which I think they should have a chance to reboot. I think they should definitely have a chance to reboot that.
Yeah.
That just using their bounty hunter character in that movie, which you probably could look at that and be like, we're basically going to make that movie.
Yeah.
But instead of the guy coming to Earth hunting the critters and trying to get them, like eradicate them from Earth and take them back to where they belong, we're going to have a Viking that's going around and taking care of these mystical beasts.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, they spent their money on set pieces on dressing the one location that they have access to. When they shot exteriors of the castles and other stuff, they were able to just shoot them. And a couple times it was just shooting the exterior and you heard the sound of like, a lyre in there, and basically it sounds like they're having a little feast
party
inside, and he doesn't have anything to do with it. He's like, I have a head to collect, so.
Yeah, the Foley and the sound design on this movie obviously plays a huge role in it as well. And we've talked about other movies in the past that, really do a great job with this. And I think this was one of the places where they probably spent some money as well. Because, you know, the Foley on this is pretty amazing. I mean, just, you know, the sword being drawn out of the scabbard. I mean, you know, down to the forge work. It's just, you know, he's working on his armor after a nasty episode, and he's got to repair it. I mean, it's, you know, the armor is believable. It's, you know, it's accurate for the time period. Yep. It's, you know,
a tannery working.
Right.
Paying a tannery to do a good job.
You know, for not having had a lot of money, they really did their homework beforehand so that they knew exactly what they were going to spend on. It wasn't like, holy shit, we got 30 grand. Let's just start filming and we'll figure it out as we go. It was, it seemed very, very deliberate, very precise.
Like, I would like to know what was the first, because like you said, the thing is they didn't know, they probably didn't know they had 30.
Yeah. Right?
So that, honestly, and if you look at the past things that these two guys have collaborated on, and that Jordan himself has done with like the Critters movie, just getting those things there, they're already pretty resourceful and pretty creative people. Yep. So what probably happened, this is just me, and maybe if we clip them and they can come back and tell them I'm wrong, teach me, please teach me, is that opening sequence up until the invasion into him and his daughter's camp.
Right.
And then you fast forward and obviously she died.
Right.
That opening sequence, I think, was a short proof of concept.
Huh.
Okay. Because it kind of looks a little different than everything else. And they probably knew, like, okay, well, let's get a cat. Let's find a dude willing to do this. We'll go out. We'll spend 2 days or a day and a half or whatever. And we'll shoot this. And then we don't have to recast the daughter.
Yeah. It
was like, all we'll have to do at that point is be like, okay, we're going to use this to try to find somebody to give us a place to shoot.
Yeah.
See if we can't find a country willing to let us shoot in their country that has medieval ruins or whatever.
Right.
Finding all these things. There is a little, and I think the key is the producer that started working with him in this film, called Ricky Fashim, Fashim. F-O-S-H-E-I-M. I think him coming on board to produce this helped those things come into play, and was able to be like, okay, well, if we can, I see what you're all capable of doing. I look at your other work. I know what you can do with just a little bit of help. Let me help you.
Right.
Let me get on board. Let me make phone calls for you. Let me wrangle certain opportunities. Let me find people that can do wardrobe. Like, I'm not 100% sure, but the costume designer, Andre Bavin, he worked with Jordan on all of his other stuff. He did a series of films called Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah. Right? Okay, right.
So, like, he already had somebody that already did costume design.
Yeah.
He had somebody that already did makeup. Like, all of these people are just repeat collaborators.
Yeah.
So they're all in a thing. He's like, I have this story. He and I worked on a story. I think we can make this. I think it would be a really interesting calling card for us if we can keep the budget down. Is there any way all of you guys will sign on to do this with a guarantee that if we do succeed in the development of this project, we can then solidify ourselves as a creative team moving forward, and all of you all will be hired on any studio budgeted film or whatever in the future. And they did that, like you mentioned, the Eric Wagner that did the sound record mixing. Like, he is been in the music and sound business for film for decades.
Okay.
So like, I don't know. Maybe they already knew him.
Yep.
Maybe they didn't. But I'm thinking, just based on the collaboration. No, he did. He worked with him. So okay. All these people. So he worked with him on Jordan's short film, Techno-Western, which now the bounty hunter is now a little kid. But so they're always these themes are always like this Han Solo type character.
Right.
So they're taking this kind of Han Solo type character, this like anti-hero, and just running with it.
Yeah. Why not? I mean, it's working.
And why not, you know? So yeah, I'm seeing if he was on that Critters thing, but it doesn't. Yeah, he worked with him again, yeah. So he, in his Thanksgiving, and so all these people are repeat players.
Yeah.
The only one that seems like he's the newcomer is the producer that I mentioned.
And the actor. I mean, the actor has.
And the actor. Like, that really. So, unfriended Dark Web, Best Boy Guy. Oh, well. He's basically a cinematographer. So all these guys are all like making their own projects and then collaborating on each other's projects, which also helps. Because if you have, if everybody shows up at a table with their producer hat on.
Yeah.
And you're not, and you don't think about money. You just think about not spending any, like, how can we not spend money?
Right.
And how much of a film can we get done without spending any money?
Yeah.
That should be the question of every producer.
Absolutely.
Like not, hey, I'm not going to get out of bed without a day rate.
Right.
Like that's how to make a studio movie.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why they're $300 million.
Yeah.
Because you have about 15 producers that are looking for a day rate or just a sign-on bonus and a phone call.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll make that one phone call and I'll guarantee you distribution in 5-6 territories at this rate and blah, 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 or whatever. But true producers, whether you're producing for the first time or you have a thousand or you're Robert Evans, your first thing is like, I don't want to spend any money on this.
Yeah.
So let's get the right team.
Right.
That can do a lot with a little. And then when it comes time for the accolades and when we do get the spoils of this war, we take care of them so they'll come back.
Right.
Hey, and that's how you get Roger Cormans and other type people where they just keep using the same, pumping out material of decent quality that's at a standard of cinema and, you know, don't spend any money. How can we do that today?
We got to take a break. We'll be right back. All right. We are back.
Yes.
We were just discussing how quenching of thirst.
Yeah, it might be just the ice, but it's pretty good. I'm glad I cut up that cucumber. Definitely adds to the flavor than just.
Does it? Yeah. Nice. Yeah, I mean, I think this, you know, the standout aspect of this movie and a lot of the other movies that we've talked about is the team that you form behind it. And again, to go back to what we were talking about last week on After Hours, this is what you look for when you're trying to do this. You look for people that are going to show up. I mean, you know, for all we know that the costumer could have, when they broached this idea, the costumer on his own could have been like, oh yeah, I was looking into making medieval armor and I put some stuff together. And he might have already had this for all we know. You know, it could have just been him being creatively curious on his own, and he put this whole thing together and they were able to get it for next to nothing. You know, it's, you want a good team of people around you who, you know, are like-minded, who are committed to the art, who are committed to their craft. And if you find the right people, as these people and other teams that we've talked about have shown, you want to stay with them, because why would you risk,
you don't need to go any up? Because now you have the ability to not only value those people with after work,
mm-hmm.
but now you get to grow with them creatively too.
Right.
Like it reminds me of multiple interviews with like Steven Spielberg and Marty Scorsese also has worked with a lot of the same like department head, creative heads. And it's always like I said, if you're a filmmaker and you run into somebody who just like, I'm building costumes regardless.
Yeah. Right.
Like, regardless, whatever's happening in life, whatever is being made or whatever, I'm the one, like, I'm going to build a costume.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not interested in fashion design. I want to build worlds with wardrobe.
Yeah.
Really? Show me some of the stuff you're doing.
Show me what
and they
you
start
got.
Going yeah. through their closet of builds.
And getting
you're like,
ideas.
I can make a whole movie on three of those pieces.
Exactly.
And they're like, let's do it.
Yeah.
Sold. Then you're on to, like, okay. And you find, like Thelma with Scorsese with his editing and somebody that just understood his concept and ideas and theory of film editing and pacing of a film. And it clicks, and then you ride with them until the wheels fall off, until one of you dies, and then you just continue to care about them after they're dead and thank them every film that you have after they're back.
Absolutely.
It's like when you start finding these department heads that are going to be doing that anyways, or you got a prop masters or prop like that have. They're like really all they really want to do ever is to have their own prop
shop,
you know, and make very realistic props that if you break them, they're not too hard to fix or too hard to redo or to make. You'd be like, how often can we work together?
Totally.
But, you know, and they're like, well, and it's weird that it's the ones that are makers. And that are already doing while you're when you come into contact with them.
Yeah.
And all you do is have kindred spirits of doing and producing like these guys are obviously, they're going to continue to make films whether anybody gives them the right to do it or not.
Exactly.
They're going to be like, what do we really need? This is what I think the $30,000 went to: camera package, generators, and lights.
Probably.
And not of the lights was pyro light, was using fire a certain way.
Yeah.
You know, you could see there was a couple where they had to do some background lighting.
Mm-hmm.
They had to silhouette the exteriors a few times at nighttime.
There was a cave. The shots in the cave looked like they were pretty challenging to get, you know.
Right. And then materials. Like they basically. It looks like all the labor was just passion oriented.
Yeah.
And everything else was when they show up, when we're shooting out there, we need to feed them and we need to make sure they have a warm and dry place to sleep.
Yep.
And I guarantee if we do that, when they show up every day, they know the type of environment they're going to get to work in. So they're ready. They know. They already know what's going to happen.
And you and I, we know what that's like because we
finding those people. It's
we've got some actors that we've worked with that are in it, you know, obviously, you know, they'd love a great payday, but they're also in it for the sheer creativity and the sheer art of it. And they're awesome to work with. They show up, they know their lines, you know, and they just give 100%. You and I appreciate the hell out of that because as we're trying to get off the ground with Pound Cake,
shameless plug.
We would. I think we both would be doing it anyways.
Like, yeah. Well, we absolutely would. Yeah. You know, I mean, look at some of the stuff we're doing right now. Roadblocks don't matter to us. We're going to do it anyway. But when you find other people, you know, outside of you and I, and they're sort of that same mindset, you're like, oh shit, this is great. We're starting to put together people that we can go to repeatedly for different projects and say, we got something else, are you interested? And they go, yeah, just tell me when and where I need to show up and I'll be there. It's great, you know.
Yeah, like that's kind of like the whenever I come across somebody who wants to do film or movie making or storytelling in this medium, like the first thing I was like is, please tell me you don't just want to be an actor, or please tell me you don't just want to be a director.
Yeah.
There's been very few times and they're like, well, I really just want to focus on producing, or, oh, okay. And then part of me thinks, well, is that just because you think that's where the money starts? Because it doesn't. A lot of producing is like getting paid for hours that you know you aren't going to get the bill for.
Yeah. Right.
And then like, or the other thing is, like, please tell me you want to work in a department. Please tell me, like, you just want to be the best editor that's ever lived.
Yeah,
please tell me you just want to build perfect sets.
Yeah.
Like, not just hot sets that are shootable. Like, I like knowing angles and knowing that you can build one thing and be able to shoot at three or four different angles and get a different view. Yeah. Like, I just, like, if you're talking to somebody and they're like, I just want to be that person, you're like, write that name down.
Yes.
Make sure I don't piss them off. You know, make sure I don't, like, go have an ego rant on this person.
Right.
Because those are the ones that actually make the movie for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, if you're a filmmaker, you need those people to be a filmmaker.
Yep.
Otherwise, you're just a film dreamer.
Right.
Which is fine, you know.
Yeah.
You can dream about movies. Fine. But when you actually want to get your hands dirty, if you're talking to a bunch of people that are like, I make some really good props, but I'm not getting out of bed for any less than this day rate.
Yeah.
I got my own shop. Everything's better. It's like, well, if you have your own shop, those are the people that stopped being hungry and just started collecting.
Yeah.
Like, they're collectors at that point. Mm-hmm. They're collecting, like, prestige or something. They're not really aiding in the process of making movies. They're in the aiding in the process of making income or money or they want a retirement, and that's fine.
Yeah, I don't bring
I'm not dogging those people. I'm not saying that's a bad thing to do.
It's a different team. That's all. It's just a different thing.
Right.
You know, like we've talked about on After Hours, like we've talked about when we talk about movies before, the kind of people that we want to work with, you know, are just hungry, always hungry. Yeah. Even if they just ate, they're still hungry. They're still thinking about, how can I get better? How can I improve? What's the
or how can project? I cook that steak better? I just ate that steak. How can I cook it better when I make it again in an hour?
Yep. You know? Yep. The people that are coming back to you going, listen, I know we just shot that, but I was thinking about it last night, and I think we can do it even better, or I can light it better, or I can dress the set better, or I can give you a better performance. If we just, you know, I mean, I just appreciate that, because it's the caliber of person that is able to look at themselves and say, I can be better. I just need an opportunity to shine and show you that I can be better. It's like, I want to work with you all day long.
Like I said, it's as a directing actors or directing anything. I think good directors take that title for granted, like take that title for exactly what it seems. It's like, you're not telling people what to do.
Right.
They're already doing it. A director is somebody that just goes, you're off the path. The vision, here's the singular vision path, and they're veering off of that, and you're just trying to redirect them back onto that path.
Yep.
And the thing is like, if you have somebody who like that just wants to get it right, the one of the hardest parts is getting to the point to where you become the right kind of cheerleader, so that when you know they can do better, but you know that, and that's also a little bit of the producer hat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know they can do better, and it gets you, moves your passions even more that you're dealing with an individual like that.
Yeah.
But you also have to become this force of expressing future opportunity for them to shine in that way, and giving them enough acknowledgement and their own self-doubt that you nailed it.
Yep.
And let them, so that, because they're going to continue to do that. Any true artist is going to continue to, bastardize their own work and think that they can do better. But I think true makers are ones that are able to take constructive criticism, but also able at some point and with enough guidance to admire the stuff that they've done before. Even if they think they could do better, they're like, yeah, you're right. That is a pretty good sword.
Yeah.
You know, or that tannery job on that chest piece was pretty dope, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You're right. But thank you for saying so. You're right. I think I could do better, but thank you. I appreciate it. You know,
absolutely.
The people that are just so humble in everything they do, but hungry, and that never ends, you know?
Right. So, yeah. So I mean,
find those people.
I think we've definitely found a filmmaking team in this movie that is comprised of people who are like that. I mean, I would be mystified if you know, we found out at a later date that they actually had $1 million to make this movie, you know.
I at the same time, though, I wouldn't be surprised. And at the same time, I think that they could still find a way to mitigate the process of being like, yeah, it looks that way.
Right.
The fact is that they made $1 million, a short fantasy movie that towards the second half of it became true horror,
mm-hmm.
like a real horror movie, in that like another genre-bending horror film.
Right.
And if they saying they made it for $30,000 and they got $1 million out of it, that's blowing my mind that they aren't either helming like a showrunner for HBO on a new Conan series or Barbarian series, or even if they're like are like universe, they're like, do you want to make three Critters movies in a row?
Yeah,
but do it the way that Christopher Nolan made the Batman series.
Yeah.
Do you want to make a real world kind of real like alien cowboy type, you know, real world express of this genre? Maybe they have all that. Maybe it's in there. But the fact that most of them are still advertising on IMDb Pro with their personal, straightforward, personal contact information.
Oh, is that what they're doing?
Or that either they're really humble and that's the kind of life they're always going to lead.
Yeah.
Or they're like, I don't know. Maybe they're like, we aren't interested in making those kind of movies. Like, well, maybe they're like, give us $30 million. We're going to make $30 million movies. We're going to make 60 $500,000 movies. We'll be making movies with $30 million. We can make movies for a decade.
Well, hold on. Let me stop you there. When you say they're advertising on IMDb, what do you mean by that? Is there
not advertising that when you can look up their contact information?
Yeah.
And they have, like, just for instance, Jordan's pops up. You go under his contact information. He has a manager.
Who's his manager?
He's got a managing agent called Healer Highwater Productions.
Okay.
Peter Healer. A3 Artists Agency.
Okay.
I mean, they have, and this is one thing that kind of perked my and shows that maybe there's a big deal coming.
Okay.
Big announcement, or they're working on something that's top secret and can't be talked about, is their Greenberg Glusker legal representation.
Is that a big firm?
It's a pretty decent sized firm.
Okay.
Right. So, I mean, their number one client is Tom Cruise. So.
Oh. Okay. Well, yeah.
Yeah. And their second is Vin Diesel. Their third is Chris Hemsworth.
Okay.
David Fincher. And their number six guy on the star meter of who they put is James Cameron.
Oh.
So they're at the right legal firm.
They were on the rise.
That's what tells me is like, I think there's a big deal coming. I think they did make enough of a splash with this movie.
As they should have.
Which if this is making, it's why it's so hard to believe that 30,000 clamshells was all it took to make this movie. And like, maybe that was the nuts in the soup of it. And a lot of it was just hunger
and
passion
and eagerness
and knowing what they had and knowing the execution would be capable knock this out of the park and then just wait for it to happen. And so they're whoever is handling their future contracts, they're in the right house for that.
Well, that's good. That's good.
That's what tells me that why there's no option property or something in script at the script level of production or something in development or something in pre-production is because they are setting on contract building of doing something long-term.
Yeah. Plus we also have to factor in the whole pandemic bullshit.
Well, that too, but
I mean, things are starting to open up again, and there are actually productions going on, but I mean, you know, the fact of the matter is that this movie came out in 2019. Maybe things progressed and then just stalled because of COVID. I mean, it's entirely possible. I would love to know that they are being tapped for something.
Well, their main legal representation at that agency, the guy who is at the law firm.
Yeah.
That is their they are his clients. Their number one, his number one client, Matt Glauser, is Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Right. So these young filmmakers that are making this kind of a movie for $30,000, they're American kids. Yeah. Like, you know, how old is? He's 34.
Yeah.
So he's, you know, 10 years, 8 years younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the best legal representation in Hollywood.
Yeah.
For building a career.
Yeah.
Based on legalities.
Right.
So that tells me enough, the writing's on the wall, that they succeeded.
Good.
I mean, the numbers on return or whatever aren't saying it, but they piqued the eyebrow of enough people to say, well, they signed their ticket.
Yeah.
Let them in.
Absolutely.
Let them in. We'll figure out something that they can do. And when it does it, we're going to make sure that their futures are taken care of and anybody they want to collaborate with are taken care of and blah, blah, blah.
Right. Hey, question for you, though. Can you look up and see how long of a shoot this was? Do you know how many days it was?
It doesn't really say.
Yeah.
I'd be
very curious to know what because obviously the red camera package.
It just tells you when it was actually released, April 5th, 2019.
Yeah.
But it's showing production starting in 2018. So that tells me that they were in production for months.
Yeah, that's where
so if release date was April 5th, depending on how long they were in post production.
Yeah.
But, you know, if they're showing a 2018 film that went into production in 2018 and it released in 2019, either the distributor Vertical set on it for a while.
Post could have taken a while, too. Yeah. I mean, I would just be curious to know, because that's, you know, when we talk about expenses, you know, renting a camera package, especially a red camera package, is a pricey endeavor, and it, you know, knowing how long they had that for, unless again,
no. Here's what I think. I think Kevin Stewart, owns one.
Mm.
It would make sense that he's doing enough for a day rate. He's doing enough DP work, enough cinematography work. Most DPs, if they are worth their salt, after they've made five or six shorts. And they have rented those cameras and also was able to get a little like most of them are squirreling that money away until they can get the camera that they have found they work best with.
Exactly.
And know inside and out. And once they get there, they acquire it because they know that as soon as that tool is owned, it becomes a workhorse and they can get two or three features out of it before they have to cycle up.
Yeah.
You know, so like I would say to most like kids that are in their 20s are like, what profession should I go into if I want to make movies or be in the films? Like, well, if you can get a job as an editor or a DP, you'll work all the time. And and if that's all you want to do and all you want to care about, then I would recommend as a DP, you work on enough that you learn enough about all the cameras or just camera period.
Yep.
You learn enough about the history of camera building all the way to camera theory, and then you go and you study on current cameras enough, even if you're just watching how-to videos on YouTube, get as much information as you can, and as soon as you can get either a prosumer or a pro level camera package in underneath your own roof that you know backwards and forwards, you get that thing and then you start telling the most talented storytellers that you know, let's go make some stuff.
Yep.
because then you're really going to start making money and you're going to start getting phone calls. People are going to be like, come shoot my movie. That movie was amazing. You did amazing. It just will happen. Same thing with editing. Filmmakers are always going to need an editor.
Absolutely.
Even if it's an assist them in post-production, in editing room.
Yep.
You know, in a suite somewhere. But so if you want to be, if you want to try to tell this from the inception of the story, it's a lot harder. You do a lot more work for nothing.
Yeah.
And it's longer hours. but I'm assuming that when the accolades come, you're not going to accept them anyways.
Right.
At that point.
You know? Right. So what do you think? Would you give this movie? Really?
Oh man, this, you know, like, like that many.
Speechless. Just speechless.
That many. No, honestly, I would give, if all Jordan and Kevin, if all they had made was Critters Bounty Hunter, and we looked at how much was that?
I think that franchise is just in such a need of a reboot. Anyway, oh, I always thought
it would kill. I would love it. Yeah. I mean, it's trying to. They've been trying to reboot it for a decade now.
I just thought it was always underappreciated myself. But
which is why I think they probably did the fan film. They were like, "Oh, they're trying to reboot this. Let's show them what we can do with the material."
Yeah. Why not?
But hold on, let me. Where the hell is it? Oh, there it is. Oh, it doesn't have a cost. Put it this way. His Thanksgiving, which he was the director, puppeteer, producer, writer, and also was the turkey. He made for $4,000.
Okay.
Right? But then you click on it, says $3,500. But he did Thanksgiving 3 in 2012 and had $112,000 budget.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. I haven't seen it. I'm going to probably go watch it now, but I have to tell you, from dollar to screen, I guarantee you, The Headhunter was probably a better ratio than Thanksgiving 3.
Yeah.
You know? But what that did, obviously, was some level of a payday.
Yeah.
They already knew. They've already made two before then. They already know what they're doing.
Right.
They probably were able to redo puppets, redo a lot of the stuff they already had on hand.
Right.
I really think that if all I knew was that stuff.
Yeah.
And we were talking about Thanksgiving or their 2016 short for $8,000.
Yeah.
For called Techno Western. I would be like, these are filmmakers.
Right.
These are young, you know, Tarantino's. These are young Robert Rodriguez. These are people that understand that you can tell stories, and if you let money keep you from being creative, you will be able to do that until you die.
Right.
Or you can say, what do I want to make? Let's find a way to fake it until we make it. Let's find a way to where when we fake it, no one's going to know that we didn't have the best equipment or the most talented staff
they're gonna spend half of the podcast talking about how they don't think it was just $30,000 that they had.
You want that level of aftertalk.
Exactly.
Because that's why it makes sense. That's why a legal firm like that would be like, yeah, we'll sign you guys and handle everything moving forward.
Absolutely.
I think you all have a Hollywood career under your hands.
Oh, they absolutely should.
We want to make sure that those hands don't get cut off in the meantime while it's grabbing all that money that we're going to get a piece of.
Yep.
You know. Because right, I think after that, there, you know, a lot of, you know, they obviously have a team.
Yeah.
That team deserves tens all the time.
Yeah.
Like, if you're gauging it on its own level of merit in comparison to every other horror film ever, that even if you cut it down to horror films that bent in genres, I can't give it a 10. But, you know, with all of that knowledge and pathos behind this movie, you want to be that person in the line of three people of the dunk contest holding up tens and waving them around and thinking, like, damn, he flew through the air like Superman, because that's what it was. If I was just basically being Robert Ebert or Roger Ebert or Robert, you know.
Well, I mean, I loved this movie. I loved it when I saw it the first time last year.
I'd give it an 8.
Sorry. An 8, okay. I loved it again when I watched it this afternoon. I want to see a sequel. I said this last year to them.
Well, that's the one thing I didn't like about it. What's I mean, if I have to nitpick, it's the fact that he rubbed that mud salve on him many times.
Well, that's the
and why thing. His head wasn't already reanimated.
I know. Well, I mean,
there should have been some sign of reanimation.
Well, yeah.
Even if it was a wink to the camera.
Yeah, but I just feel like if they had done that, you would have been like, oh, okay, it's going to come back. We're going to get a sequel.
Yeah, but I already did that. Like, my brain was already there. So if it did,
you're right.
Two things could have happened.
Yeah.
I would have been like, oh, shit, they did it.
Yeah.
Or, yes, we're going to have another one.
But I think
– I think I would have been like, yes, we're gonna get to be in this world again.
I don't disagree with you, because – The fanboy in me would have been like, yes, we're going to get a sequel. But I admire the fact that they didn't give you an easy out to either hate it or to love it. They just kind of kept it there. And they're like, we don't know. We don't know.
Last time we saw is his body was going that way and his head was still on the spike.
Exactly. So yeah. So
maybe that's the opening. You know what would be here's the thing. If they're listening or watching this, this is what I say. You open the sequel the same way you open this movie, with a long shot of his face with sound, and then all of a sudden he goes, because I think it'll be a good bookend. It'll lead way, but then you pull out and his head's still on that stake.
Well, I think if he does that and then says, body, you know, like, you know,
that gives you your check on, you make that little sizzle, and now you got your money for
absolutely. Well, I mean, I just to wrap up, I think these guys did an amazing job. I think the whole team did an amazing job. I really enjoyed this movie. I'm at a solid 8.5, you know, on this. Highly recommend it. It is available on Amazon Prime for rent, or Shudder. I think it's playing on Shudder right now.
And you can buy it.
Yeah, you can buy it too. Yeah, and buy it. You know, throw these guys some coin, for crying out loud.
Well, I don't know. Maybe they're already past that, and Vertical's the one.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But either way, this is a team I want to see a lot more from. I had a great time with it.
I'd collaborate with them.
Oh, I'd collaborate with them in a heartbeat. I offered to write with them on it. You know, so that offer still stands.
In the writing room on that one.
Oh, hell yeah! It'd be great. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, this movie tickled all of my funny bones in all the right ways. I really enjoyed it. And again,
the young Dungeons and Dragons kid going,
fuck yeah. I had a great time.
Yes.
Damn right.
Freaking warlocks and freaking werewolves and demons.
I just want a copy of the book that I mentioned
fucking earlier in the podcast. Man.
You know, with the drawings and everything? Whoever did those, oh, shit, that was great.
The Headhunter Part 2, or Headhunter Mud Salve.
Mud Salve. Oh, my God. All right, well, listen, we have to get going. Check out The Headhunter. It is a fantastic flick. We are going to be recording After Hours, so don't go anywhere. Until next week. Chris, what are we talking about next week?
It's your turn to pick the really, movie. You're really putting I've been thinking about it all day.
All right.
Been thinking about it last week. Up until you just asking me, I still haven't figured it out. Should I make them watch After Hours to figure it out? No, I'm joking.
Oh,
no, I'm joking. After seeing this movie, I was really thinking, it was like, okay, so what other horror genre film did this? But I was thinking, okay, well, I could do the Blair Witch, right? Mm-hmm. But that was more of a marketing stunt, because when you look at the real film, there really is no merit. You're like, right. Yeah, of course it was made for that much. Of course, right. It was $7,000.
Yeah. I feel like everybody talks about Blair Witch.
But also, that's why it's been back and forth, because also, it's like, do we really want to do another low budget? And I was starting to like, what's the most expensive horror film ever made?
Okay.
I still don't know. It's up in the air. Hold on.
Let's see. Goes to work on the computer to find
out. No, sorry.
Meanwhile, I just want to point out I'm out of drink. So,
Yeah, so it is listed as it.
Really?
Right?
Okay, yeah, I can believe that. All right.
The being. But the second... So it's between, you know what? We're just going to do it. The Sixth Sense.
Okay.
So that's the second one. But I have a question. It's up to you. I'm going to leave it up to you. It's either The Sixth Sense or The Visit. Both M. Night Shyamalan movies. Mm. I like The Visit. I think he revisited. See, it did. His core ideas are, but. Should we do The Sixth Sense, or should we do
The Visit? I would rather do The Visit, just because I have never seen that movie.
I like The Visit.
All right.
Okay, we'll do the Visit.
All right, cool. All right, that's settled. All right, good.
M. Night Shyamalan's The Visit.
All right, that is next week.
Yes.
And I am going to get another drink. We're going
to
be...
And I will go to my old trust. I will finish this Viking brew.
Yep. And we're going to change the lighting as we do, just to get the mood lighting.
You already brought in a little touch of the.
I know. I might mix it up though. We're gonna see. But folks, thank you for joining us. Be sure to watch us on youtube.com/poundcakemedia.
Help us add bottles.
Yes, more bottles, and we are everywhere that you get your podcasts: iTunes, Spotify, Anchor, Stitcher, you name it. We are there. Please support the podcast. We're at anchor.fm/cocktails-and-screams. And we will see you next week. I am John Mers.
And I am Christopher Grace.
Thank you all for watching. Take care.